KYW News Radio Original Podcasts. From KYW News Radio 103.9 FM, this is Bridging Philly, connecting our communities on the issues that matter to you. Presented by Gift of Life Donor Program. Register as an organ donor at donorsone.org.
Hello, I'm Raquel Williams. Welcome to Bridging Philly. Philly Truce is a nonprofit organization in Philadelphia that was born during one of the city's most devastating spikes in homicides. Two young men came together and wanted to do something about it, and they wanted to focus specifically on Black men, giving them the resources and wisdom needed to thrive in their communities and interrupt the cycle of violence. I sit down with Mazie Kasher, co-founder of Philly Truce, along with their executive director, to learn more.
So the community people are going to heal the community.
Charity Howard is with the Gift of Life's Donor Dash team.
We have people waiting, and I think this race will provide them hope for that second chance at life.
All that's coming up on Bridging Philly. Today we're catching up with one of Philadelphia's most innovative and community-rooted violence prevention organizations, and one of the first organizations that I had the pleasure of covering when I first came here around 5 years ago. Philly Truce was born in 2020 during one of the city's most devastating spikes in homicides. The organization has become a model for what it looks like when community members step forward to intercept cycles of violence and build pathways towards sustainable Black manhood. Joining us is Mazie Kasher, co-founder and interim board chair of Philly Truce, along with Kelly Green, the executive director. They have a big fifth anniversary gala coming up on May 8th. We'll learn about that and the origins of Philly Truce. Thank you so much for joining us on Bridging Philly.
Raquel, thank you for having us.
All right. We've spoken many times over the years, so I'm happy to have you in studio to really sit and pick apart how this all took place and the origins in Philly Truce. So I'm just going to ask you to take us back.
Sure.
Take us back to 2020. What was happening in Philadelphia at the time, in your lives and in Philadelphia, when you decided that Philly Truce was needed?
Absolutely. So in 2020... I was actually not living in town. I was living in Jersey. I came to town to an event. A classmate of Stephen and I, Stephen is the co-founder, Stephen Pickens, and we went to high school together. And another high school classmate was opening a barbershop. It was a grand opening. It was October 24th, 2020. And I ran into Steve. I hadn't seen him in about 5 or 6 years. And I think just at that moment, seeing our friend open with his always a pillar in the community. Not at that time we knew it, but I think that struck us in a way. And so when Steve, who's also a fighter, fire, and an EMT, started talking about how he was really feeling like he wanted to get involved to get in the fray and try to disrupt this cycle, I think all of those elements came together to give us a sense that this is our time as men now to do something for our community. Because the first thing I thought was, wow, it's 2020. We're counting down to 500 homicides or counting up. And 30 years ago, when we were in 10th grade in 1990, it was 500 homicides. That all struck me right in the moment. And we just started talking like, well, what do you want to do? What can we do? How do we go about it? And that's pretty much Philly Truce's birthday, 10/24/2020.
Wow. Now, it's just amazing that the two of you kind of put your heads together to not wait for someone else to do something.
Yeah.
Tell me about that wherewithal that you got together and said, we're going to do something. We're not going to wait for anyone else. And what kind of obstacles did you face when you were putting that together?
It started with that conversation. And basically what happened, we just started talking every day. And we talked through possibilities. And we began very early to start reaching out to people who we found, I think, maybe through Google searches and stuff like that. And one of the first persons we came across was Reuben Jones, Frontline Dads. He organized a meeting, and there we met some other folks. And we just really hit the ground running. So Steve and I, we went to high school in North Philadelphia, Broad and Master. It was called William Penn High School. It's no longer there. And we went to school during the crack era. And so we was in the thick of everything as kids. And as grown men, middle-aged men at that time, who had come through it relatively unscathed, I think that wasn't lost on us. You know, not having spent time in prison, not having some of the other major setbacks that a lot of our friends and family and community members had, and also that we saw that these young people were headed for, I think that was probably the chief motivator.
Okay.
Yeah.
Your mission is really centered around Black men.
Absolutely.
So talk a little bit about that. You talk about sustainable Black manhood.
Yeah.
What is that? What does that look like?
Well, for the exact definition, people should go to phillytruths.com and read it, because that's one of the things I don't have down pat, but I can tell you what it means, right? You want to have zero involvement with state welfare, family court, criminal court. You want to be constantly seeking useful education and self-knowledge, whether on a personal level, familial level, cultural level. And you always want to be looking to make your finances work legally and legitimately. So those are the core tenets, right? That will enable you to sustain yourself into adulthood, right? So a lot of times we make decisions from poor counsel as young people in impoverished neighborhoods, right? If there's no fathers around and the homies are the fathers and with the blind leading the blind, right? We often make decisions that impact the rest of our lives at very early ages, right? And so it is both a preventative and a reparative framework that we work from when we talk about sustainable Black manhood.
Okay. Kelly, how did you get involved with Philly Truths?
Interestingly enough, I was working as a therapist in a school that Mazi and Stephen came and did one of their gun violence rallies with some of our children. Mm-hmm. And so I met them. Our paths just kind of briefly crossed. But one of the members of their board was my supervisor and my friend. Okay. And so I called my friend and said, my nephew's coming to live with me for a little while. You know, he got in a little trouble. He's trying to get his life together. And he goes, give me a second. I'm going to call somebody. And he called Mazi. But I didn't know at the time he had called Mazi. And they gave my nephew a job with the Peace Patrol. At the graduation, I talked to Steve. And then I got a phone call. It was like, hey, well, you want to sit on the board? I was like, sure. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I love to give back. Then it grew from there. I tell people it happened so fast. It was like one day, it's like, would you like to be on our board? Oh, sure. Would you like to be the board treasurer? That sounds great. Let me see if I can do that, because that's, you know. Well, how about if you and the chairman trade places? Because I think that's a better fit. The chairman agreed. We switched places. What, could you come in and do a little case management? Sure, I got you. Like, because I'm loving the concept,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
One day I'm sitting in there and Mazi goes, well, how about if me and you trade places? I was like, no, wait a minute now, because I saw the big shoes that Mazi felt and I mm-hmm. filled, and I was like, And I tell you, Steven said to me one day when Mazi wasn't in the room, he goes, I really do believe you are the person for the job. He said, and one thing really proved it to me. He said, you get along with Mazi.
Okay.
But the truth is, when they interviewed me mm-hmm. and they asked me, why would a Black woman want to be over a organization that basically is about Black men? Mm-hmm. My response was immediate to say, I'm glad you asked me that. Because who more wants to see a Black man prosper than his mother or
right.
his wife
right.
or his sister? If anybody should be pushing this agenda, it should be us, right? And I think the problem with a lot of what's happening in our community is we're not pushing the agenda. It's like the one place he should feel as a king and proud and respected and heard is the one place that a lot of time he's not.
Right.
Now, some of that we could put on him, but some of that we have to own too as Black mothers and how we raise our sons. And I just felt like this was like Mazi and I started talking about what I call the next level for where I feel the sustainable Black manhood so he can have a sustainable Black family.
Love that. Love that. That's perfect. So you mentioned, Kelly, that your son was part of the Peace Patrols. I wanted to talk
my nephew, but now my son is.
Okay.
Yeah, so, and this is the truth of about life, is that everywhere somebody in your life has the experience that would benefit from Philly Truce. And mm-hmm. the simple concept that we teach from the model of visual deterrence, when you go into these communities that have the poverty and they have the abandoned houses and they have the broken lights and the busted sidewalks and the trash on the street, you have high violence. When we come in as the Peace Patrol and go, hey, we're here. We see what's happening in your community because it's our community too.
Okay.
So the community people are who are going to heal the community. And that's basically what we practice and preach to the people. Maybe you are part of a problem at one point, but now you're part of a solution, and it doesn't require anything but your presence.
Right.
You have to just be bought in. So when my nephew came, you know, he loved Peace Patrol. Like, and so one of the things I heard Mazee say early is, I want to see this be something somebody can do all the time. And so now as we're growing it and we're having our trainings, people are saying, like, I just want to do this. Like, we offer other things. Like, mm-hmm. we'll help you get training to be a peer specialist. We'll help you get training to do HVAC, all of that. And one guy was like, yeah, I just want to do Peace Patrol. Like, okay. Do you have a job where I can do this all day? Yeah. And I was like, not yet, but hang in there, buddy, because okay. we're going to figure out a way to make that happen, too.
Let's get more into the Peace Patrols. Let's talk about exactly what it is, what you guys do. I know it's just as involved individuals, young men that are out there. That is an important factor because there's a trust issue, I'm sure, when you're talking to people in the community, like, who are you and why should we listen to you? You know, that kind of thing. And it probably could get dangerous at times. But talk to me about the Peace Patrols. How did that come about and how does it work?
Our first initiative, the first thing Philly Truce did was called Philly Truce App. And it was 2021, like March or May of 2021, it launched. The premise was, this is a tool for people in the community to share knowledge of potentially violent conflicts before they explode. If you give us a shot at it, we'll do our best to mediate, intervene, and see if we could not let it escalate. And so people started using it, but we wasn't always getting what we was targeting, right? The types of disputes that we felt were imminently violent, right? We were getting like nagging, like next door neighbor stuff, right? A few things happened all at one time, the convergence of a few things. A guy by the name of Atlas X, he works at Hispanic Community Council Services, which is you know, a partner of ours. He came and he said, I have this coalition of people. I think this app is great. I would like to bring you into this thing. We get into this coalition of people and they're talking about, we want to call a ceasefire or a truce or something, put something out in the community. And so somehow Philly Truce becomes at the center of this thing. And the premise was, we was going to go out Thanksgiving weekend 2021 and we was going to just declare a ceasefire, go out in the communities and just say, listen, we got to cut it out. Can we have less shootings and homicides this Thanksgiving weekend over 2020? Because it's a highly volatile weekend. And so basically by going out with some literature and evangelizing the app and Philly Truce and saying, this is what you could do, this is how you can get in touch with us, that was a Peace Patrol. And we had good results. And then different iterations began, starting with right after that. We said, wow, this was good. We're going to try again Christmas Eve to New Year's Eve. Then we started having some infrastructure. We had different houses of worship, community centers all said, well, we'll be a hub and we'll recruit our congregation, our membership. And although the numbers didn't really go our way in the very next iteration, we saw that it was something to it. And so to answer the question, a Peace Patrol is when a group of community members come together, they target a block or area for its volatility, and you go and engage the people around our responsibility as community members to make this safe. and you just on the corner of that block, which is now we, you know, it's gotten a little bit more sophisticated. It's identified through metrics from the DA's office, and we got a block score and all this fancy stuff. But basically, you set the tent up. You got 6, 7, 8 people out there, and you do hourly patrols. And by the time you get done, I mean, you've engaged a couple hundred people. Now we do what's called lights and blights. We notate in the tablet instances of, you know, inoperable streetlights, broken sidewalks, dumping, abandoned vehicles, open abandoned houses, right? So this is what Peace Patrol is today. It's community-led visible deterrence. It's an opportunity for those who have offended or taken from the community to give back. It's an opportunity to have the community see that there is value in not only their community, but in their voice and in their ability, capacity, and responsibility to do this for themselves. And we welcome volunteers. So on PhillyTruths.com, if you go to Peace Patrol calendar, you'll see where we're going to be that day, that evening. And right now, our next expansion is just to get multiple teams, multiple blocks simultaneously. That's like our next expansion. So Monday to Friday, 6:30 to 10:30, Philly Truce is out from first day of spring until Thanksgiving Eve.
Bridging Philly continues in a moment. Back to Bridging Philly, connecting our communities on the issues that matter to you.
What are some of the stories that you've heard with volunteers engaging with people in these communities? Some more memorable stories where you know, okay, this is making a difference. We were able to do this with this person, or this person decided to put the guns down. What are some stories?
Well, the most vivid one is last year, at the end of last year, we piloted this on SEPTA, right? So we had Peace Patrol on the Broad Street line in the L for the month of December, 2 to 6, after school rush hour. And we hired people for this who trended a little bit younger. Some were as young as 19, you know, maybe 25, 26, 27. And they found such joy and authority in being told that, you know, if you see them about to jump the turnstile, if you see them about to have a fight, like, to your comfort level. It's always to your comfort level, right? Then feel free to intervene. If you get pushback, it ain't no thing. You could call this up the police. You could do whatever. They have other tools. But it is about engagement, not enforcement. And we had one guy, and again, this is why the guy, the young lady from the street who has decided, you know what, I'm not on that no more. This is why they're the best candidate. We had a guy stop a fight. Young man pulled the weapon out. This is all on SEPTA. And he just talked them down. You don't want to do that. You don't need to do that. So that's one instance. We had an instance just the other day on the street, a domestic thing that was going on outside. And the peace patroller felt confident enough, and he intervened. And there is not a lot that we see, quite honestly, because I do believe the visible deterrence works, right? We have had instances at times where we start heading toward the corner and the corner clear out. So all of that works, right? Because every homicide is a 2-second poor decision at the end of it. So if you can disrupt that 2 seconds, you might have saved a life. You might have spared somebody's life in prison, right? So that moment when they see us, or when we're seen and we don't see nothing happening, that's success. The beauty and the sad part is we used to do this. As a community, we knew intuitively that we had to do it. For whatever reason, now we have to pay people to do it. That's just where we are.
That's just where we are. Understand. Yeah. But yeah, getting back to the grassroots of things, that's really what works. Let's talk about this gala that's coming up. I mean, this is 5 years of Philly Truce, so you have a lot to celebrate, of course.
Yeah.
What's the gala going to be all about?
So the gala is titled Through the Years.
Okay.
And of course, I'm a Kenny Rogers fan, but you know, that's
you can sing it if you want.
I won't do that to Mazi and them and play it, because I was definitely going to play it. But I've watched and like even like looked back over the YouTubes and seen the exponential growth of this concept. These two guys have created something powerful. Because to me, if one life is changed, then it's powerful. Right. So I definitely have seen many people, even they'll stop by my office and be like, Miss Kelly, I'm just so glad I'm here. I'm just so glad to be a part of this. I'm just so glad. And even when I talk about the money, I mean, yeah, that's good. But I you know, I'm like, you can't do this for money. That you can't do these kinds of things for money. It has to be something you want to make a difference. And so I feel like my Z and Steve have just been these forces that were just pushing towards where we're going, right? And I tell people all the time, they've laid this tremendous foundation. And I'm literally humbled that they would trust me. And so I wanted to celebrate them and their accomplishments to this point, and then gauge for us what the next 5 years are going to be like. So we are definitely wanting to celebrate them, honor some of the people who have been with us from the beginning, like people before I even came into the picture that Mazi didn't mention about Operation Hug the Block, where for 77 nights, they walked the streets, and this was free. Like, these people were just doing it. Councilmen were out there. People were out there just being a presence for 77 nights consistently. And those people to this day, when they see us at an event or whatever, they're like, yeah, I love Philly Truths. I've been with y'all since the beginning. And we want all of those people to come back. I'm telling people, come sit at the table with us. And just let's talk about where we were and where we are and where we're going. Mm-hmm. So the gala is about our past and our present and our future.
Wow, that's awesome. And the future, of course, is bright. Mazi, what do you see in the next, say, 10 years for Philly Truths? I mean, it's growing so fast.
Let me say this. When we got into this, sadly, I began to learn about our predecessors. And I think if we, the community, had known about some of our predecessors, maybe even some of these cycles wouldn't continue. So for us, for me, I'll speak for me, the House of Emoja in West Philly was the most beautiful, impactful violence interruption process. They essentially started by opening their house when they found out their son was in the gang. They opened the house to the whole gang and began to reparent that gang, and then more gangs, and then it grew and grew and grew to an entire block of row homes on Fraser Street in West Philly. So what I believe is that to have that captive audience, meaning they're in the house, you have the ability to shape and mold their very consciousness, attitudes, beliefs, and all of that, is what makes something like a, you know, a sustainable manhood framework more reliable, able to deepen it. So, you know, our future is about getting into housing. We're planning something right now called the Safe City Campus. It's in Germantown. There's one house that will be for youth. And then we're building what's called a Peace Patrol house. In the zoning code, it's called a safety service building, something like a fire station or something like that, where you can work from and have lodging in a single place. So I see that as the next tier in our ability to extend and expound on the change we're able to make in the individual's lives.
Okay. Well, yeah. Bright future, yeah. I see for Philly Truths. Yeah. So congratulations on a successful 5 years.
Thank you, Raquel.
And where can people go to learn more about Philly Truths?
Well, you want to go to phillytruths.com. You want to get your gala tickets Friday, May 8th at the Kimmel Center. We also have coming this summer the Brotherly Action Games, 4th of July. Yeah, big 250
thing. Oh, wow,
thing.
Great.
And I just want to say, too, like we are wrapping up what's called the Year of Brotherly Action. These are actually our last two events. We started last year on the 4th of July. We had the first annual Brotherly Action Parade and Games, where we called male-led and male-serving mentoring orgs to come You do a little tournament with the old heads and young boys, and you can win money for your organization. It went pretty well. We're looking to double down on that this year. And then we had a series of events throughout the year. We celebrated the 30th anniversary of the Million Man March last year.
Right.
We did the SEPTA Peace Patrol. And this whole campaign of brotherly action around, you know, you asked, do people know that this matters? Well, when love becomes a verb, right? So we the city of brotherly love, but we sometimes or oftentimes don't feel no love out here, right? Because we're not acting like it, right?
Okay.
And so we thought if we flipped that a little bit and really tried to take an open, welcoming position to all the other orgs, because a lot of times, you know, all of the crime statistics intersect in Black men. So if you want to have a cleaner, greener, safer, whatever, you need to engage with Black men. On my way out the door as the executive director, that is probably one of my most proudest achievements. It was a very rigorous agenda. We got through it. Not a lot of people are talking about it, so that's why I want to take this opportunity to say it. I appreciate Kelly for taking this moment to recognize us, and I just want to thank her publicly for taking on this. It's a crazy job, right? And it's crazy at every org, I'm sure, but at Philly Truce, it's extra crazy.
That's great. That's great. Well, continued success to Philly Truce. And, of course, everyone head over to phillytruce.com, get the gala tickets. Of course, donations, volunteers, all that information is there.
Absolutely.
Mazi Kasher, Kelly Green, thank you so much for joining us and sharing on Bridging Philly. Appreciate
it.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
Bridging Philly continues in a moment. Back to Bridging Philly from KYW News Radio 103.9 FM.
Welcome back to Bridging Philly. The Gift of Life Donor Program is the region's most recognized organ and tissue donor program, and they also celebrate their heroes. On this week's Shara in the City, Shara Day Howard takes a trip to South Philly to hang with the Gift of Life team for their 29th annual Donor Dash at the Navy Yard.
This week on Shara in the City, we're out at the Navy Yard, where Gift of Life is hosting their 29th annual Donor Dash. And it is always a blast. I cover it every year. But this year, they're doing a little something special. They're honoring the life and legacy of Garrett Nicholas, the 21-year-old Westchester student who was hit by a car in April and killed. Now his family and his friends are honoring him to let people know the greatest gift you can give is the gift of life. Now, who can argue with that? Let's go get inspired. Woohoo! It's gorgeous out here. Not so much the weather, but of course, the people. A beautiful community. So let's get cooking, but I gotta find my buddy first. Kendall, who's supposed to hook me up with all the deets. She's gonna give me the 411 on what's going down today. Oh, there she is. Hey, Kendall.
Hi, I'm Kendall. I handle the media relations here at Gift of Life, and we're so excited to be out here on this gloomy Sunday, but listen, it's still bright with the spirits that are out here.
Right, we're bringing some sunshine today.
Exactly. We're still excited. Everyone's pumped. Everyone's ready to go. So.
Sometimes this is what you need. You need that little push by the wind
yes.
to get you over that finish line.
Exactly. And I think everyone has that push. We have people that have gone through really extraordinary experiences, and they're just really happy to be out here and be able to celebrate life. Yeah, so we're here at the 29th annual Gift of Life Donor Dash. We have a lot going on today. We have a 3K walk, 5K, 10K runs. We have a kids fun run. We have the health fans out here, a lot of volunteers, and we're expecting more than 15 or 16,000. So we're really excited.
I love the numbers. They're huge, and it's already huge. I mean, we walked in, $700,000 already raised.
Yes, absolutely. The community has always been behind Gift of Life and go hard. And we
yeah, people come here and they're not playing.
Oh, no.
They're dressed for success. They're ready to get across that finish line, laced up and ready to go, hitting that pavement. I mean, so much commitment. I love it. So let's get going. There's some people you wanted to introduce me to, right?
Absolutely. Let's get going. I have Rick Haas, our president and CEO of Gift of Life Donor Program. Rick.
Hi, Rick.
Nice
Very
to
nice
see
to
you.
Meet you.
Nice to meet you.
All right, so tell me.
Yeah, today's highlight really is to showcase our community. Today, we'll have donor families to honor. We'll have patients who've received transplants to showcase how well that they're doing post-transplant. We have people waiting, and I think this race will provide them hope for that second chance at life, and really a great opportunity to showcase the efforts of donation and transplantation, and really to say thank you for families who've made that decision to donate and provide so many gifts to our community.
I love the full attitude of gratitude, always here. I mean, you've got a little bit of gray skies, but you've got people bringing their sunshine, bringing it with them.
Oh, you'll see today really the best, I think, of humanity. You know, transplantation is unique in that the science is there. We know the surgical technique. We know the medications and, you know, to help patients, but it really comes down to the kindness of a stranger saying yes to donation. And for us to be able to celebrate them today and spread the word so that more people will register to be a donor is just so important.
That means so much. And real life examples that we can see every day. Garrett Nicholas, who was the Westchester student who gave the gift of life.
Yeah, Garrett made that decision and put that donation checkbox on his license. And then, you know, his parents, you know, were so supportive of that. And now to make his story even broader, you know, he directly saved 3 lives and hundreds through tissue donation, and now his story and spreading and to be like Garrett is going to impact even more. And so you know, we're honored and humbled that a group of his fraternity brothers will be out here in mass really to support him and to really make sure that we maintain his legacy of giving.
And you guys made a point to honor him today.
We sponsored a bus to bring their team down from Westchester University. They've made a beautiful T-shirt to honor Garrett, to continue to spread Garrett's story of giving and back to the community.
Check that box. Yeah. Anybody can be a hero.
Anyone can do it. All you have to do is go on to donorsone.org. Check that box. It takes about 30 seconds to add your information, and that 30 seconds can mean the lifetime for somebody else.
Right.
And, you know, they're really able to turn their tragedy into triumph for some other people.
So many examples today. Kendall introduced me to. What's your name, buddy?
I'm Tom Casey.
All right, Tom, and you have the coolest 2 women that you say are a perfect example of what today's about, right?
Absolutely. We've got Brianna and Lisa O'Connell here, and their story is very inspiring, and I'm looking forward to them sharing it with you.
Ladies.
I'm Brianna. Nice to meet you.
Wonderful. And
I am Lisa.
I think I'm going to cry. Okay, when I was 5 back in 2001, I was diagnosed with kidney failure, stage 5.
I was just a baby,
I know, gosh. My mom brought me to CHOP. We got running with who could be my donor, and my mom was my best match, and three short months later, I was able to get my transplant.
Like that.
It was amazing what we were able to do, you know, in that short amount of time. She was pretty sick, and to see her now thriving and growing, she got to do her dream of being a nurse at CHOP.
And to turn that into such a beautiful light. I mean, that's alchemy, right?
Yes, it was.
I would say so.
That moment that you realized you could save your own daughter's life.
To be able to do that for her, and I tease her all the time. I say, I gave life to you twice.
Facts are facts.
Yes. Yeah, you can't get away with anything with that.
Because every mom's a hero.
Every mom.
But your mom gets 2 capes.
She's a special hero.
You're already saving lives. You're saving others.
Yeah, so at CHOP, I work in the operating room. I am on the transplant team, so I'm learning how to do kidney and liver transplants. I think it's so cool. I geek out on it every time.
It's a miracle to watch, to see somebody being so sick and to be able to just then, you know, enjoy life as a second chance.
It's a wow factor.
Yeah, it is a huge wow factor. Huge.
And then I ran into Shamim Hussein, whose son Shahid received a kidney years ago, and she says she's taken that impact all the way over the ocean.
After transplant, it took a while to get back to normalcy, but the miracle we have witnessed truly gave us a purpose of our life. We are actively raising an awareness on organ donation, and not just here in US, but also in India.
Such powerful impact across oceans, people. And then Kendall introduced me to one of my favorite couples. I tell you, they're hilarious, but also so sweet.
So this is Tracy Burrows.
Hi, how are you?
So you're here today to run or no?
I am here to volunteer and support all the runners.
Just as important.
Yes, so her husband, Scott Burrows, is a heart recipient. And Tracy was there every step of the way.
But God is good.
Yes.
And he's got a heart in 4 months. The surgery went wonderfully. We had people praying from coast to coast. And I told him, I said, you coming home? And here we are.
Joy, joy.
Pumping that heart.
It absolutely, literally, literally.
All right, Scott, so your wife, she really did the deed. She made sure that she got you from point A to point B, cross that finish line.
Yes, she did. She pushed me the whole way, definitely. An amazing heart. Always had a beautiful wife, absolutely, but an amazing heart.
And what do you have to say to that donor out there?
Thank you. It's a small word, but you have no idea what it means to me and my family. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for my donor family. I hope I meet him one day, just to give him a hug and say thank you.
Oh, it's coming.
So definitely, definitely. See, you're going to get me started crying already.
I'm already crying. And once the tears dried up and the smiles came out along with the sun, it was time for the races to start. Bang, bang, they were off. The frat brothers of Garrett, Nicholas. They were totally in the game, and they were wearing what they called their purple passion t-shirts that read, "Be like Garrett" on the back. Go Team Garrett. And before you know it, they were all back and we continued our conversations. And his frat brother, Mike, gave us some insight to who Garrett was, but also he had some words of wisdom.
Garrett was, he was such a nice kid. He always made everyone feel welcome, made everyone laugh, boosted everyone's mood. He was just always a positive person.
And you said, you know, if you're going to go buy that box, don't do it. You got to check that box.
Yeah,
right?
Definitely. Like, if you can impact and save somebody else's life, might as well, right? There's so many people that need something out there. So I think it's a great thing to do, great cause.
Right, this kid, wise beyond his years. And truly, I had to go back to Rick Haas, the CEO and president, to go out with the feel-good message of the day. And Rick, oh my gosh, what a wonderful day.
I hope they were inspired by the stories that they heard, second chance at life, about families making that decision. And just seeing how people are out here celebrating really the gift of life, one gift to another. And hopefully as they're thinking about that and making that decision, the stories that we're here today brings them into action.
Thank you for joining us. Bridging Philly is brought to you by Gift of Life Donor Program. Register as an organ donor at donorsone.org. For more information on Bridging Philly, follow KYW News Radio on social media. And if you have any ideas for interesting features that you'd like to share, feel free to get in touch with us at bridgingphilly@kywnewsradio.com. For Sharaday Howard and our producer Sabrina Boyd-Circa, I'm Raquel Williams. Be well.